Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
We're back on News Talk STL 101.9 94.1. Thanks for joining me. This a little chilly. Hopefully, last night was the last freeze. We're hoping to talk to Steve Gorham, who's I think really called it in his latest book about the green energy breakdown. Things are really beginning to fail in the whole green energy hoax that the administration and previous ones have put upon we the people. The promise of alternative so-called renewable energy sources, not so renewable when they fail, when the infrastructure isn't there, when the demand outstrips capacity. And Steve Gorham joins us now. Steve, welcome to the Randy Tobler Show. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Dr. Tobler. Great to join you.
Steve is the executive director of the Climate Science Coalition of America. His book came out late last summer, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. And Steve, you know, we talked with you when the book came out, and already a lot of the things that you were talking about at that point have come true, not the least of which is the auto industry, starting with Toyota, because they never bought into it. They've been hybrid all along. And now I heard that Ford is pivoting away from EVs to hybrids. What other signs do we have that what you said about the green energy breakdown is coming true?
Yeah, the signs are coming a little bit sooner than I forecasted. I do think that with the power of the green movement and climatism, this can take a few decades, but we're seeing a bunch of signs. And as you mentioned, the EV car market has hit a speed bump this last year. We had electric vehicle sales decline, new sales in California and Germany in the fourth quarter. That's first time ever. And this first quarter of the year, electric vehicles actually lost share. The figures are just out now. They took about 7% of the market. And last year overall, they were almost 9%. Ford last year lost $4.7 billion on their EV business, about 47,000 per vehicle. And so we're seeing a bunch of issues, and it looks like the early adopter phase is over. The folks who wanted that cool Tesla as a second car sort of have those. And if you're in an apartment and you need to charge your EV and you got to stretch a power cord across a public walkway, it doesn't work quite so well. So they're slowing down a little bit.
You're right. Steve, you're right. Most of the people I know that have EVs, and I know several people that have Teslas, and you know, they really like them. I've ridden in it once, and it's quite a ride. I mean, I like the instant acceleration. It's nice and quiet. I mean, there is, like you said, something cool about it as sort of a shiny bell and whistle, to have in your garage. But on a practical matter, the range isn't what it should be. The cold weather problems that we saw highlighted this winter certainly throw up a lot of red flags for everyday working people who need to make sure they get to their job. And not to mention that I heard it reported the other day. Tell me if this is true. I maybe they misreported it, but I thought I heard that there were only, I thought I heard the word two public charging stations that had been built in the whole United States because of the infrastructure bill. I that can't be right, can it? But I mean, it's certainly a minimum number of public stations.
I think that's probably not correct. There are a lot of them that are going out there now. If it was heavy trucks, there's maybe only one of those right now. And but yeah, you know, the CEO of Hertz resigned about a month ago, and CNN called it a horror show. He was the guy who said that Hertz ought to go electric vehicle, and he pledged to order 100,000 from Tesla. And they give these to Lyft and Uber folks too. They rent them, but more than 100,000 from General Motors. They ended up ordering 60, and then they found out that people really didn't want to rent electric vehicles when they went to rent a car. You know, usually you're traveling and you can't charge it at home, and then you got to put up with the charging problems. The other thing that they had problem with was the cost of electric cars. If you get into a minor collision and you touch the battery in any way, you might have to replace the whole battery, which is a $20,000 charge. And then, as you say, the cold weather, boy, there was a really, they got a black eye in Chicago, didn't they, in early January? All those national TV forecasts, TV views of people pushing cars around trying to charge them when it was about 0 degrees. They're just not made for cold weather. You lose about 20% of your driving range at 30 degrees Fahrenheit. And then down about 10 degrees Fahrenheit, EVs will not charge unless you're in a heated garage. So we have a, you know, Chicago, there's a new quip going around about EVs. and the word is that 90% of electric vehicles ever manufactured are still on the road and 10% of them made at home.
That's fantastic. We're talking with Steve Gorham, who has called out the energy climate hoax for what it is in his book, Green Breakdown, The Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Let's talk a little bit about the absolute hysteria of the climate change people. Look, yesterday there's a minor earthquake that shook the Northeast coast, right? I mean, New Jersey, New York, you'd have thought that it was Armageddon listening to the newscast, and they dismiss the big ones that happen out west. It's only if it happens in New York and New Jersey, then it becomes important, Steve. But there are already people coming out and saying in another bit of evidence, they claim that we now need to go to, you know, a carbon-free society sooner rather than later, that it's the carbon-rich economy and the global change that somehow has increased the weight of the oceans on the tectonic plates, and that influenced the earthquake. I don't know if you've seen that. They're already coming out of the woodworks. Do these people need some straitjackets or what, Steve?
Yeah, everything has to be based on the fear of man-made warming now, no matter what it is. I mean, it's just crazy. They had a little earthquake in New York, and sounds pretty rare, but, you know, then it's always got to be climate. It's like inflation. They just came out with a study, a scientist claiming that a big chunk of agricultural prices is we're going to have inflation due to man-made warming. You know, so inflation's got to be the problem. Earthquakes got to be the problem. Everything you can possibly think of. There's even an article published a few years ago. By the way, I have sidebars in all of my books about all these crazy headlines. There was one in the Miami Herald that said couples cheat on each other because of man-made warming. So now, you know, you have an excuse. Global warming made me do it. But there's just an infinite amount of these kind of crazy things.
Steve, I think everyday Americans like you and me and people who aren't living in gated communities in Arlington and around D.C., look at what they're paying for energy, whether it is now the rising cost of oil, barrels up to, what, 90 bucks a barrel?
Yep.
And we feel it every time we go to the pump. Is there any hope that as a result of this experiment with the so-called sustainables and renewables, that the demand politically and just financially on people, on their politicians, will be to finally return to reliable energy, you know, whether it's natural gas to fire our fuel, our electricity plants, whether it's, you know, of course, oil for our cars. Is there a hope that we'll return to that, or is that forever lost?
No, we're going to have to return to that. And that's what the book Green Breakdown is about. People are going to demand a return to low cost, reliable energy. Just think about our electrical system right now and what's going on. So today, the U.S. gets about 59% of our electricity from natural gas and coal. Most of it's natural gas. But the green movement says we need to get rid of all of that. So we're going to take that 59% away. At the same time, they're saying we all need to drive electric vehicles. Big increase in demand. They're saying we need to go to our homes and switch from gas furnaces and gas stoves and gas water heaters to electric appliances, another big hit in demand. Then we have an artificial intelligence revolution going on. Data centers are upgrading, and they're going to use the servers and data centers are going to use between 6 and 10 times as much electricity for this AI revolution. Another big hit in demand. Then we've got the federal government that says we need to create green hydrogen fuel by using electrolysis of water. Very, very electricity intensive. So we have all these things that are trying to drive demand up, part of the green movement. At the same time, they want to shut down all our natural gas and coal plants. And this is just not going to happen. This is going to lead to blackouts. It's going to lead to higher electricity prices. And people are already starting to push back. We're starting to see some of that in Texas and some other places.
Talking with Steve Gorham, who is a speaker and author of 4 books on energy, climate change, sustainable development. Latest one is Green Breakdown, Coming Renewable Energy Failure. Steve, I am a real advocate for nuclear power when it comes to just our reliable, clean, and despite the Fukushima and the Three Mile Island and other, you know, I mean, even if you factor those in, it still remains the safest way to generate power on the planet. And the most efficient in terms of just, you know, input cost and electricity output. With the new technologies, we hear about modular nuclear sodium-cooled plants and so forth.
Right. Yeah.
Isn't that really our hope in the future as we transition to something off of fossil fuels, just if nothing else for pollution's sake? I mean, forget about, you know, warming and CO2. What do you think about that?
Well, I do have hope that that nuclear will find a breakthrough. We really need some cost breakthroughs with nuclear right now. It is much more expensive than natural gas to build a new nuclear plant. But as you say, there's a lot of people pushing small reactors and also the molten salt reactors, and I'm hoping those are going to be able to give us some cost breakthrough. Which will allow us to build more nuclear plants. There is a lot of interest in Europe, and a number of nations have pledged that they want to build more nuclear by 2050. A lot of it to eliminate greenhouse gas emissions, which is a bogus kind of thing. But you know, we have an issue going on in the U.S. We have 94 nuclear plants operating today, but most of those are more than 40 years old. We've only built 3 nuclear plants in the last 20 or 30 years. Almost all the plants were built in the 1970s and 1980s. So this is a resource that is aging. Now, the good news is they can extend these, you know, they extend their operating licenses. They can go for another 20 years or more. But this is another big kind of a warning signal on the horizon. We're going to have to replace and upgrade this resource at some point in time, or we're going to have further pressure on our power supply.
What's going on in the big finance world? I mean, the big players, BlackRock, JP Morgan, you know, other Wall Street firms, man, they've been dug in and absolutely totally bought into the whole climate change decarbonization movement for years.
Yep.
You know, a lot of their investments have to be tied to some kind of ESG, blah, blah, blah. They've been changing their stance recently. I think that's maybe gone under the radar.
Yeah, this is another sign of the green breakdown coming. Just last month, we had BlackRock and JP Morgan, State Street and PIMCO all pulling out of a group called Climate Action 100, which was a pushing big companies to address climate issues from a financial point of view. And you're right, ESG is a big part of that. Now, ESG means environmental, social, and governance. And that was what companies were supposed to be taking care to do. But the E was kind of the big thing, the environmental. It was get rid of your support for coal, oil, and natural gas. We're going to have a big E. But we've had a bunch of states that said, hey, we don't like that. Texas and West Virginia and Florida have said, we're not going to use any of our state pension money with your funds, BlackRock or JP Morgan, unless you get rid of this ESG thing. And we're talking about billions of dollars here. And so they've sort of said, okay, we're going to go back.
Hello? Did we lose you there? Did we lose Steve?
Hey, Steve, we can if you can hear us, I think maybe you might have accidentally hit the mute. I think the gremlins must have got him, actually.
Hello, are we still there? We
lost Steve.
There he is.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, we lost you there. But you were talking about how they, as the investments from the big, state run and other, the general funds for raising revenue within states,
right.
Was pulling back, then suddenly they adjusted their investment strategy, right?
Yeah, sorry about that interruption. So, yeah, they've said, well, if you're going to push the CSG thing, we're not going to invest funds. We're not going to invest our state pension money in your funds. And so they've all said, well, maybe this isn't such a good idea. The other thing that's going on is that the renewable energy stocks are just doing terribly. There's a stock index with the top 30 or many of the top renewable funds in the world, stocks in the world, rather, called the RENIXX Index, RENIXX. And it's been in existence for about 20 years. Well, it has been down about 50% in the last 3 years. It's fallen 3 years in a row. And so these wind companies are having a lot of trouble. The car charging companies, they're all losing money. And so, the Wall Street firms are going, well, we're trying to tell our customers to invest in these green things, and they aren't doing very well. It's just another sign that we're having some problems with the green revolution.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're calling them out and calling truth to power and truth to, frankly, I think it's hysteria in the green breakdown. Great read. I hope that folks can pick up a copy. Where do they get a copy of that in your other book, Steve?
Yeah, they can go to my website, Steve Gorham, GOREHAM.com, and I'll send them a signed copy. They can also get them on Amazon, of course, and there are ebooks as well. And, they just need to take a look at these and get themselves educated, because what they're getting from the news headlines are wrong, and they need to push back on their political leaders, say some things like, why do you want to raise our energy prices, and some other questions.
Yeah. Hey, well, it's a great read, and it's been a great time talking with you. Thanks very much, Steve Gorham, Executive Director, Climate Science Coalition of America, stevegorham.com. Thanks. Have a great weekend. Yeah, I don't know about you all, but I think this increase in the CO2, or the alleged increase in CO2, is certainly making my grass grow more. Man, I'm having to cut that grass every 6 days or so. Ugh. But it is fun, that smell of fresh mown grass, isn't it? All right, we're going to pivot as we await talking to Virginia Cruda at the 7:45 block. And don't forget, 8:25, Waleed Faris, who is the expert and former advisor to President Trump and Congress on matters in the Middle East, author of several books. He'll join us at 8:25. I'm going to pivot a little bit, though, and ask a cultural question. It's something I've been on my mind. And that's when we come back. We'll bring Jerome into this comment. Why are young men, particularly young white men in America, checking out? Seems like they're checking out. And what does that tell us about our current society? I think it tells us a lot. We'll talk about that when we come back on the Randy Tober Show. Stay tuned.
Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. Talk lines are open now at 314-912-1019.
Welcome back into the Tobler Show. This is a fun show that we do, because we can talk with Jerome about these cultural issues and have a real conversation about the way our society is heading. And we talk with Mike Ferguson earlier. You can talk all you want about Senate Bill XYZ and House Joint Resolution AB3, but at the end of the day, the living of life happens between people, right? Everyday people doing commerce, having relationships, talking over a sandwich at the McDonald's, or a cup of coffee, or a chessboard, or over the radio. 314-912-1019. And we really have some cultural gaps, some real dark places in our body politic. And among them is the young white man. We've all heard about the urban legend of the young man who just sits in his parents' basement and watches video games and smokes weed. Well, I ran across a tweet that I thought you might want to hear, and then we're going to bring you into the conversation, talk with Jerome about it. He's right in or just has escaped that slot, the young, 18 to 26-year-old male. Here's that clip.
The economy sucks. You're probably never going to buy a house. Your degree is useless and left you in mountains of debt. You're nowhere near capable of providing for a wife and kids, and you can't imagine yourself settling down with any of the women in your age bracket anyway, because Disney princess programming and feminism has left them fundamentally unwifeable. You've grown up in a culture which has celebrated every other form of identity besides you, and in exact proportion to how much they're not you, to the point that now schools and companies can hire based on that metric, all the while being told you can't complain or notice any of it because of how privileged you are. And if you don't know how privileged you are, it's because of your privilege. Even though you're basically a debt slave with minimal hope of a financial and familial future because your economy and culture has abandoned you. So a lot of dudes just checked out and started like smoking weed and playing video games. Some of the other ones went to countries where they like white people and men, like Thailand, I guess. And some of them were like, you know what, this is a good challenge. But if I want a big house and if you come on my land, I'm going to shoot you with guns. I want a bunch of kids and a wife churning butter.
All right. Maybe that's a little condensed and escalated cry for help among young white males. And on the one hand, people might say, wah, 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 whiny, whiny, whiny. On the other hand, I think there's some objective evidence. When you have DEI programs, whether it's college admissions or whether it's hiring practices, overtly excluding white males, and you're a young guy just out of college or out of, you know, whatever training. Maybe you didn't go to college, but you're ready to go. You're ready to go to work. I've had young men tell me this. It's hopeless, Randy. It is hopeless. I don't even get a look. And yet my friends of the female persuasion, my friends of the LGBTQ persuasion, my black friends, my Asian friends, you name it. We are being overtly excluded, and that's been proven. I mean, there are documented cases across the nation in academia, in corporate HR offices, where anyone but white males, and that includes young white males, trying to get their life started and some organized, structured semblance of an existence going, don't have a chance. And hopelessness is the worst thing the human condition can experience. Jerome, is that guy just a whiny loser, or is there some truth to that? Where do you stand, and what is your friends telling you?
Yeah, we just need to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. That's really all that's going on. No, I resonate with some of that. So for my personal story, when I went into college, I'm a graduate with Dean's List honors. I was 3-term club president. I was 2-term vice president for a second club. I was tutoring students. I was actually a student teaching a class while I was attending the class, just because, I did a lot of the work outside and it kind of made sense to me. And I had overload schedule. And so I graduated with a bachelor's. And so believe me when I tell you, I really tried my absolute best to excel, to achieve. I was going through housing issues. This was during COVID as well, mind you. So I was out of work and I was having housing issues, and I managed to graduate just to find out that in the current economy, that really does not mean a whole lot. Being an honors list graduate and a club president and being active, socially and community wise, I've been rejected from over 500 different applications that require. Some of them are entry level paid training that don't require anything more than a high school degree. And I can't even get an interview. So even with this position, and that's why I appreciate the comments you give me so much. I've applied to other stations as well. The only reason why I have this job is I met somebody that had a connection here at a volunteer event completely unrelated to politics. So, yeah. So it's really comes down to a lot of people that I know. So there are two different types of people. There are the people that want to work hard and they want to excel and they want to achieve. And it doesn't feel like there's any opportunity. And after so many times where you're like, well, I have these skills, all I need is a chance to show you, like, I can't even get in the door to show you who I am and what I'm about before you throw my application in the garbage because I don't meet the right scores. I don't meet the right diversity quota. I don't meet certain things like that. That's a lot of how a lot of people feel when they've worked so hard to get somewhere and there's just not an opportunity for it. And then on the opposite end, the hopelessness of it, I know underachievers. I know people that just skated by, did the bare minimum, and they've just said, well, look at the economy. Look at all the issues that we're facing as a nation. Look at all the people that we can't elect out because, you know, the people on this opposite end over here are the ones that put them in there, and they outnumber us, so we can't even get them out here, and they're making our lives harder. So what's the point of even trying? Now, the last comment the guy made about having wives churning butter, I thought that was funny, and I do think that there is a sentiment for people looking back at the way life used to be. And looking back and realizing, like, you know, I can't remember who the quote comes from, but there's a quote that says that the homemaker is the most essential of all jobs in the world, and that every other career path is just a means to support the housekeeper. And I don't think people realize how important that is, especially in today's age. You know, a lot of the issues that we're having are coming from a lack of a support structure at home. You know, they don't have somebody there.
No, you're right. I can tell you, Jerome, from my personal experience growing up, my dad was working three jobs. Dad was a school teacher and led the instrumental music department at Lindbergh School District for years. He would come home and teach private lessons, and then he would go out 5 to 6 nights a week, sometimes 7 nights a week, and play band jobs. He played at the Muni, the Fox, when the Disney shows, the circus came in, and later on I joined him and other guys in the business doing that. And so mom was there to be the anchor of the family. And I know a lot of the feminists will say, oh, what a demeaning. You know what? It takes an iron will to do what women, traditional women homemakers do. It takes an iron will, unbelievable resilience, unbelievable multitasking skills, which we know is not one of the male's bright, you know, points in our toolkit. Let's be honest about it. Males excel in other things like very task focused, work, and sometimes the more physical work and so forth. Everyone, both genders have their complementary skill sets. And it started, you know, Hillary Clinton put it on steroids when she made the comment, and no one really pushed back at her except America's housewives when she talked about in the 90s. Well, I'm not one of those women, you know, who wants to just be at home baking cookies? No, Hillary. You are the most vile, useless woman on the planet. And you had the nerve to call out housewives. So when he was talking about churning butter, okay, I think that was a metaphor for the value of the homemaker, the anchor, the cornerstone of the family, which is the woman who can raise the children, keep the house going. The man makes the... Now, my wife, after the kids were grown, she then got into a career. She's a holistic nutritionist. She works with us in the office. But we had that traditional thing. And to have that put down when anthropologically that model at least should be considered among the universe of respected models for societal family structure, right? It's been rejected. And this is not to demean women who choose a life of no children and go to work. That's fine. But I think what we've come to now is that for whatever reason, men, young men who just want to go out and work hard and support a traditional family, they're being called white supremacists. They're being called Ku Klux Klan. They're being called, you know, guys that are disrespectful for women. And it's really not so much about man and woman as it is, what is this about if you're not anything, if you're anything but white, if you're anything but male, you get an escalation in the job search. You just said it, but no one will admit to it. HR directors around the country, you tell me, ladies and gentlemen, you call me if you're connected in any way to HR. And you don't, you can be anonymous. Just call and identify as Joe Biden. Just tell me if that's not true. There are overt and absolute stated policies to prefer non-white non-male when it comes to entrance or hiring. Tell me if it isn't true. And I don't know, Jerome, but so here's what happens. Where does apathy and frustration turn into, I hate to say it, but turn into violence where young men just lash out? I mean, I don't want to see that happen. That's what I fear may happen.
And that's what we see historically as well. I don't want to say that we are at a point now where we're all banding together to go kick butt. But if you look at historically, when economies start turning and there's lack of opportunity, if enough of people such as myself were to feel hey, we have the skill set, we have the drive, the desire, the motivation, and yet we're being gatekept. And I'm not saying that historically no non-white, non-male group has ever not felt that way. I'm sure that for different periods of time in history, other people of other minority groups may have also felt that way and have gone through that. But in the current climate, there comes a tipping point where it's going to be, well, if we're not going to be able to play by the same rules that our fathers and grandfathers played by, if we're not going to be able to engage in this strictly because of the way that we look rather than the merit of our character and the ability that we possess, then we're going to take it. And I'm not saying for me, I'm not saying anybody I know personally. I don't want the CIA getting after me, but I'm just saying that is a lot of sentiment, especially in these online corners. It's a lot of people. I'm not saying all of them are A-plus students that, some people are just very entitled. And that's another thing we have to recognize right. is that, there are people that do the bare minimum and they still expect that they should have this awesome life because, the milkman back in the day used to be able to support his family. Why can't I do that work at McDonald's, right? But at the same time, that's where I think we're seeing a lot of this, people are becoming more vocal. When you tell them, and I started noticing this back in 2013, 2014-ish, when you're telling us, I can't speak my mind and I can't say certain things, even if it's not intended to be hateful. I just can't say something that I observe because it might offend this group. It might be bad for this group. Well, this group 30, 40, 50 years ago was horribly treated. Therefore, we're going to get back at you now and we're going to make it harder for you now. And I think that when enough people get sick of it, that's when it's going to turn to, well, let's band together. And I think that that's why on colleges, you'll see, black only groups. You'll see minority only groups, gay only groups. But you cannot have a white only or a male only group. That is considered hateful. And the more you tell us that we can't, talk to each other, we can't have our own space like everybody else is getting. Well, what other option? When peaceful resolutions fail to manifest, then violent revolution becomes inevitable. And I don't want to see that with our country. I think that as a free country, we should not resort to that. But that seems to be where more people are leaning because how else are you going to feel powerful than to intimidate or to band together or to do stuff? And that's kind of what scares me. Thinking about the future is where, at what point is violence going to become inevitable?
Well, yeah. And look, that's just the natural arc of history. When people are tyrannized and oppressed too much, they lash out. And I don't want to see it. And I hope that a conversation can be had among reasonable people that are able to zoom out and realize that curing past racism with on steroids racism, curing past chauvinism with on steroids feminism and anti-male behavior, including things like the Me Too movement, where young men don't even want to. No wonder young men are, forget about it, they're checking out of the dating scene because there's no young men are guilty till proven innocent when the finger's pointed on them. Old men, it doesn't matter. And I'm not saying that there haven't been abuses in the past, but it's come to the point where you're guilty until proven innocent. If you date a woman and you have a consensual relationship and then a woman decides to accuse you, we know how those things work out. And so I don't know. I'm getting a communication here that I'll share with folks at the top of the hour, but we have to go and talk to Virginia Cruden. We'll do that in just a little bit. I have an amazing communication about the beginning of a large corporate conference that one of our listeners attended and the way it began, and I can't believe what is being relayed to me. Well, I guess I can, in light of what we just talked about. It's the Randy Tobler Show on Saturday morning, 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. Virginia Cruden coming up.
Randy Tobler, Truth Warrior, Woke Destroyer, on News Talk STL. Watch us on our live stream using Rumble, Facebook, and Twitter. This is News Talk STL.
Welcome back to the Tobler Show. Every Saturday we get together with Virginia Cruden. Welcome into the program, Virginia.
Good morning.
Hey, I want to play something for you that Dana White said the other day that I thought really encapsulates a strong sentiment that I wish more Americans would abide by. Take a listen.
All you young people that are watching this right now, You don't want anything from the government. The only thing you want from the government is for them to stay out of your business. That's it. As less government as absolutely possible. If you think the government is ever going to take care of you and make all your hopes and dreams come true, you are out of your mind. It's not how it works.
So since we have earthquake on our mind, I'll use the metaphor. There are two tectonic worldviews at odds this election season, Virginia. One is the worldview of libertarian first principles. The government needs to be minimum. Keep me protected, you know, defend the border, a justice system. And other than that, leave me alone. And the other one is the recent Fox poll says 50% of people want the government to help them out. And that means more than just some public safety. Who's going to win that tug of war, Virginia?
Well, now, if I knew that, the problem is that we have an awful lot of people who... Honestly, I think the problem is deeper than that, because you have a lot of people, especially if you go to Generation X and then the baby boomers and then back even further into the silent generation and what's left of the greatest generation, right? These are people who typically understand that the more the government gets involved, the worse things get, because they've seen it over time. You know, Generation X saw what happened when we traded in Jimmy Carter for Ronald Reagan, right? They saw what happened when we traded in George W. Bush for Barack Obama. These are people who kind of understand the way things go, right? But if you get older than Generation X, again, you also have people who generally believe or who want to believe and aren't willing to see otherwise that elected officials are generally people that we can trust. And I know that sounds weird coming from somebody, you know, my generation. Obviously, I grew up with Bill Clinton in the White House. I know you can't trust politicians. But you know, somebody my mom's age, you know, my mom is in her 70s. They're more likely to believe that we should be electing people who can be role models. And so when you see the tug of war, it's not just less government, more government. It's what kind of government and what face are we projecting to the world? And that's why you saw somebody like Joe Biden, who is completely incompetent in the White House, get elected by people who probably knew better. But thought, you know what? When he stands up on the world stage, he doesn't embarrass me as much as Donald Trump does. Wow. So you see people who actually understand the political ramifications of the decision and do it anyway because of the optics. So,
speaking of political ramifications, let's continue with that. But on the foreign policy front, here's Anthony Blinken the other day, and especially pay attention. This is about the mistaken killing of 7 aid workers in Gaza. Take particular attention to what happens at the very end of this clip and the irony of it all. Listen.
I think every Greek American in Delaware voted for
I think we got it wrong. That's number three. What he said was the mistake killing Gaza aid workers. He goes on about, you know, how Israel needs to hold them accountable and everything. And at the very end, he says that can never happen again. I didn't hear those words about defending Israel's right to make sure that what happened on October 7th never happens again, Virginia.
Well, here's the thing. First, I think that the Biden administration did, and I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just wishful thinking on my part. I think they said shortly after October 7th that the reason Israel had a right to defend itself was this could never happen again. And I think they just stopped saying it because now they're worried about what's currently in the crosshairs, and that's the humanitarian crisis and the fact that Biden is fighting an uphill battle in his own party every time he says he supports Israel. So I think that they did say it. What really concerned me, what Blinken said, was that if Israel does not immediately make amends and handle this crisis, et cetera, then they are indistinguishable from Hamas.
Oh, oh, my God.
So here's the thing. Oh. When you have a country like Israel that has bent over backwards time and time again to make sure that the civilian casualties are limited, even as Hamas is intentionally placing civilians in harm's way, right? The tone deafness coming from this administration in comparing Israel to Hamas, even for one second, it's just, it's horrible. And you have to ask yourself, is this calculated? Does he know that people like Cori Bush are listening? Does he know that people like Ilhan Omar are listening? Does he know like half the population of Dearborn, Michigan is listening? And that's why he's saying this. Or does Blinken actually believe this? And that's what's terrifying. That one incident in which either a few bad actors or somebody made a mistake. And Israel, from what I am understood, has taken full responsibility for this and is saying, hey, we're going to make sure this doesn't happen again because it looks bad. Like, they've already taken steps to correct
the issue. You're right. And Virginia, I was having this discussion about with someone very close to me who believed the narrative that what is commonly referred to as Israel being the most careful and vigilant army on the planet to avoid civilian collateral damage, and you know that now is allegedly just a myth. Well, I sent this person an opinion piece that said, and it was by a sympathetic person to the Palestinians and to Gaza, said that no, that is true. Israel does take precautions. That doesn't mean that they're going to get it right every time. So there's all kinds of misinformation about Israel's stance.
The other thing is, you know, we've been talking about this attack. How many days have we been talking about this? Whether it's a mistake or a couple of bad actors, at this point, even if you throw that out and just say it happened, okay, this is a horrible thing that happened, we're still talking about it almost a full week later, right? How long did we talk about the fact that Joe Biden accidentally killed a family of 10, including a bunch of kids, in the withdrawal for Afghanistan, not to mention getting 13 of our service members killed by botching the withdrawal completely and not getting out hundreds and hundreds of our allies? People are talking about Israel like they did something intentional and this was a targeted, you know, we talk about Israel's attacks on Gaza being all but surgical, and they have been. And so they're taking that argument and saying, well, this must have been a surgical strike against the aid workers. Yep. Well, no, you know, you make mistakes once in a while, but
it happens. Yeah, it happens in the fog of war. Hey, we have to run along, but you're right. You're right. We got to run. We're up against that hard break, Virginia. But you're so right. The quest for power will lead people to do some of the most vile, immoral things and say some of the most vile and immoral things. Virginia Cruda, we love you, everything you do. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week on The Tobler Show. All right, when we come back, we're going to be talking with Waleed Faris at 8:25. Stay tuned.